So I'll be talking today about a precipitation meta-analysis, and I'd like to start by acknowledging my co-authors. This is a cast of dozens, not a cast of thousands, but in particular, I would like to acknowledge Edwin Labria Treos. He is a postdoc at Tel Aviv University in Israel, and he has really gone above and beyond the call of duty and his enthusiasm and effort to help pull this together. So I am of the ideology that there is a scientific consensus that climate change is real and that the scientific community agrees that climate has changed, is changing, and will continue to change, and that change is a direct function of human influence. As such, I think it really does behoove the scientific community to do the best we can to understand the impacts of climate change and to present and synthesize the impacts of climate change for the public and policymakers. And I'd like to suggest that meta-analysis is a particularly powerful tool to do that, and I hope I can convince you of that in the next 14 and a half minutes. So this is a figure I put together to try to capture the trends in our understanding of climate change impacts and the accumulation of knowledge. And I'd like to suggest that funding for experiments and syntheses and modeling lags behind our confidence in historical reconstructions of these global change drivers and confidence in our ability to model these into the future. So precipitation has been particularly intractable. Precipitation is highly variable in space and time, and it's been very difficult to look back and show that precipitation has changed, and it has been particularly difficult to model changes into the future. However, over the last decade or so, we have gained enough confidence and there has been enough funding to start these experiments, and I'd like to suggest we now have a large enough foundation of knowledge that we can begin to go into the synthesis phase. So the goals of this study were to synthesize our knowledge of the effects of precipitation change on key ecosystem processes in terrestrial ecosystems, and to identify processes and biomes which are particularly vulnerable to changes in precipitation and why. Everybody has to have a cartoon, I think, in their talk. So this is my cartoon looking at different pathways of impact. And so obviously precipitation can impact, changes in precipitation can cause changes in soil water, which can cause changes in stomatal conductance, which can cause changes in photosynthesis and ultimately changes in productivity. Another pathway is changes in precipitation can alter soil water, which can alter soil microbial community composition, biomass, and activity. This, in turn, can change the availability of nutrients in soils, can change plant uptake, foliar nitrogen, for example, which, once again, can affect photosynthesis and productivity. And finally, any changes in heterotrophic or autotrophic productivity is going to change CO2. So I could also add lots of spaghetti diagrams, but I won't burden you with that. So we also have to understand the implications of interactions with changes in temperature, atmospheric CO2, and nitrogen. So in addition, we hypothesize that ecosystems will vary in their sensitivity to changes in precipitation, that the magnitude and direction of response will depend on the initial hydrologic conditions of the ecosystem, and that interactive effects among climate factors are substantial and are typically non-additive, and that the effects of changes in the timing of precipitation may be as important or may be more important than changes simply in the quantity of precipitation. So our approach was, obviously, we had to acquire data. I'm kind of in some areas the unofficial keeper of who's doing what where in global change experiments. I did a paper that summarized some of these in 2006, and I try to help keep up a website which keeps track of these experiments. That is our personal web of knowledge, but we also use the search engine web of knowledge to also try to track down different precipitation change experiments. I still use SAS. I know most of you younger generation don't know what this is, but I still use SAS to manipulate the data. And we ran the meta-analysis using a statistical package called MetaWin. Our effect size was a Hedges D. We use a random structure model, non-parametric bootstrap 95% confidence intervals. And because we're looking at both additions and irrigations and removals, we had to standardize. So we just set the treatment to be the dry, the exclusion, and the control to be the wet. I do believe really strongly that synthesis and discussion is important. With these search engines, it is progressively easy to go to the literature and pull data out of the literature. But a lot of these data, you really need to understand the experiments, the interpretation, the peculiarities of the study, and the peculiarities of the PIs to really be able to put these data together. So I think it's a word of caution about just going to the literature and pulling out information. So we did have a meeting of 25 of the PIs in October 2009. We had a follow-up meeting in February of 2011, and we've had a lot of communication back and forth by email, conference call, and Skype. So this is a map of, the location of our sites. We were able to accumulate data from 52 separate study sites and 136 experiments. Many of these sites had multiple levels and multiple treatment factors. And you can see from the distribution on the map that they obviously span a large gradient in temperature, precipitation, and ecosystem types. These are the response variables for which we collected data. And the ones in red are the ones that I'll be reporting on this afternoon. So, results. The first thing you run into when you do a meta-analysis is time. And there's a lot of inter and intra-annual variability in response. And you really need to figure out what you can take the first year response, the last year response, or the accumulation of response. You have to deal with time. So in our set of experiments, we had experiments where the magnitude of the effect size grew more negative over time, experiments where the magnitude of the effect size grew more positive over time, and experiments where there was no change over time. We did the meta-analysis, and we found across this there was so much variability, there was no significant effect, consistent effect of time. And so for this particular analysis that I'm talking about today, we used the last year of the study as our input to the meta-analysis. Now, I bring this up for those of you who are not familiar with meta-analysis. This is a typical meta-analysis plot. You have the effect size here on the x-axis. The y-axis is unitless. You want to bring your eye to the effect size, the mean effect size, and these confidence intervals around the effect size. If these do not overlap zero, it is a statistically significant effect. And if they were to overlap zero, it is not statistically significant. So, first thing we wanted to look at, after time, of course, was soil water. We wanted to see, while we're doing these precipitation change experiments, are we actually getting a change in the hydrology? Because nobody really likes to look at Hedges D. I did this as a percent change of the dry minus the wet over the wet. And you can see that without exception, without exception, our dry plots were drier than our wet plots. So we were happy about that. Above ground productivity, again, the percent change. Our overall effect size was a -0.65. The confidence intervals did not overlap zero, so it was statistically significant. And so that we can say across all these sites, above ground productivity at our dry sites was 20% lower than the paired wet sites. You can see we had some sites that showed a positive response to a drying down, and I'll show you in the next slides that those were our very wet sites. This is the same graph I showed you before. We looked to see if there were differences in vegetation type. There was a significant difference, and our grassland and shrubland sites showed a significantly greater treatment effect than our forests or wetland sites. These are negative, these are positive, although not significant, and the forests were moist tropical rainforests. Similarly, and connected is moisture regimes. There was a significant difference in moisture regimes as we classified these, with again our mesic and xeric showing a greater response than our more hygrid or wet sites. We often get questions about whether our synthesis is biased about how many irrigation experiments versus shelter or exclusion experiments. So we looked at the effect of manipulation, and there was no significant difference between our exclusions, our additions, or our two studies that altered the timing of precipitation as opposed to the quantity. Similarly, we asked if joint treatment effects make a difference in this analysis. I'm not saying they don't, but in this analysis, joint treatment effect was not statistically significant. Looking at soil respiration, again, this is a percent change. Overall E++, our overall grand mean effect size was highly negative. Confidence intervals do not overlap zero, and so we can conclude that for this set of experiments, soil respiration at our dry sites are 13% lower than the paired wet sites. Again, we do have a handful of sites. These were very wet sites, so you dry them down, you get greater oxygen, and you get an increase in productivity. For soil respiration, we did not see a significant difference between our vegetation types, although I think it's kind of interesting that the desert site showed the greatest treatment response. We also did not see a difference in our soil moisture classifications, although our wetter sites tended to show a less negative response. And in this case for soil respiration, we did see a significant difference between our manipulation types. There was no difference between the exclusion and the addition, but the timing made a big difference for soil respiration. And these are studies that applied the same amount of precipitation, but in fewer events. So large events with more dry drought periods in between. And so this really had a large effect on respiration. However, joint treatment effect, there is no significant difference. Looking at nutrient cycling, nitrogen, this is soil solution nitrate, and the top graph here is concentration. We're nice evenly divided between sites that showed a decrease in concentration and those that showed an increase. Decrease is likely due to decreased microbial activity, and increase is probably just a concentration effect. For the sites that looked at export, they were almost consistently decrease in export of nitrate at these sites. Again, not surprising given the decrease in soil water. And my final data slide is foliar nitrogen concentration. Again, somewhat of a span when we look at percent change, but the overall effect size, if I can find my mouse, was negative. Confidence intervals did not overlap zero, so we can say that across these sites, foliar nitrogen concentrations at dry sites were just 3% lower than wet sites, but it was statistically significant. So in sum, results from this meta-analysis show that changes in precipitation do alter soil water regimes. That's a good thing. Reduced rainfall significantly lowered above ground productivity, total soil respiration, soil solution nitrogen export, and foliar nitrogen concentrations. These are kind of paired. Ecosystems varied in their sensitivity to changes in precipitation and hydrologic regime is important. Interactive effects among climate factors were not detected in this analysis. And there is limited evidence supporting the importance of the timing of precipitation. So, thank you for your attention.